everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Be the Vessel podcast. My name is Daniel, and I am an intuitive psychologist acting as a bridge between Western psychology and the spiritual realm. I interview those called to the healing arts with various ways of knowing, serving, and channeling the most powerful medicine for our collective return to wholeness. If you like what you hear and would like to support the podcast, which is an offering of love, please check out my Patreon page where you can offer support or become a member of the Be the Vessel community with exclusive monthly offerings. Dr. Dan Ratner is a clinical psychologist and former chronic pain sufferer who is a mind-body expert, specializing in relief from chronic pain and other medically unexplained symptoms. He is the creator of the Crushing Doubt show and podcast, which has built a community for pain and symptom sufferers, changing their physiological experience with new information and ways of understanding the interaction between the mind and the body. His upcoming book, also entitled Crushing Doubt, is set to be published and available this fall. You can find his information and resources on crushingdoubt.org. Dan has been a supporter of mine in many ways for many years, and our individual journeys have taken twists and turns while always syncing back up in alignment with one another. You may revisit an earlier episode with Dan as we explored our current paths from that time frame, as well as our synchronous interconnection and ultimate support for one another. This episode continues to pull that thread of support, expansion, and creativity. We explore recent adventures in my own life, as well as in Dan's, which cross over in themes of creativity, authenticity, and being a channel for our highest selves. Please enjoy another episode with Dr. Dan Ratner, and may it be an invitation, a gift, and a medicine to explore all aspects and all dimensions of you and all you are meant to be in this life and beyond. Hi, Dan. Thanks for being here, and welcome to the show.
Great to be back with you as always. I enjoy our conversations pretty much every second because we don't know where they're going to even go, which is amazing.
Me as well. And we are continuing and playing out the experiment or the dance or really the intention, because it's not just with you. It's how I practice showing up with everyone along this spectrum of being present and not necessarily knowing what's going to come through. And at times using a word like channeling to describe the spectrum of what that can be like. But particularly with you, I feel we are able to enter into this resonance and this frequency where, at least for me, I can, if I'm feeling in that state of being, I can trust that whatever is coming out of my mouth is going to be aligned and it is going to be of service to someone. and that's really, I mean, yeah, I'll just start by saying that has been a fundamental shift in my life from going from training and grad school, you know, and trying to hold all these theories in my head and preparing so much for presentations and being so nervous and, you know, and still being able to do a decent job. But when I shifted gears, really in every element of my life, in with individual clients, when I started doing working in group spaces and workshops, and then just like in every relationship, practicing being okay with not knowing what I was going to say. And at first, you know, having experiences of dread or like, what if I just freeze up and I don't know what to say? But the truth is that happened to me all the time in the past. I would just freeze up. And the more I started working with the fears of not knowing, it got easier and easier. And I just tended to, even if I didn't know what to say, I could feel safe. And that to me, it just allowed things to start, the creative channel to start opening where more and more started to pour out. And we'll likely touch on that a little bit because I always have a reason to reach out to you, to get you on here. But this one in particular, I reached out because I just had a strong sense that, and I knew that it would be aligned for you, that we were meant to explore a bit more of creativity, which we started to when I had you on last time. But it's become more and more important to me as I've explored myself as a creator. And I use that word more broadly, not just necessarily being super artsy in the traditional way, but seeing your life as a creation, that the emotions and beliefs you play out every day, our relationship to our body, our relationship to, like, there is an aspect of creation. Now, I don't think we're the sole creator. There are other things. It's not that we're in control of everything, but we definitely have a say in how we create. And so that was the initial impetus for reaching out. And you're interested, which I'm glad for. And then just in the process, because over the course of when I reached out to you and we're sitting here today, I, you know, took some leaps in my own life and started.
I was going to say, it's I'm very interested to find out where you're at, or where you're at is not even an accurate term, because you're moving all over the place, which is cool.
Yeah, yeah, and we might as well just start there. Over the course of me reaching out and sitting here, I stepped into this aspect of what I and what others may refer to as channeling, very heavily and explicitly and publicly, which is a little jarring for people. But I will just say broadly that I see this spectrum of the word channeling as in the way that others may use the word flow state or accessing higher brainwave frequencies or being really creative. Basically, when you may feel like the ego mind, that sense of who you really believe yourself to be, which is often rife with repetitive thinking patterns and insecurities, and am I going to get this right, et cetera. When that gets quiet enough where you can allow something else to come through, anything, and you can attach whatever story to it you like, whether it's a part of yourself or it's something else, or it's a higher multidimensional, more spiritual aspect of yourself, however you frame it is fine, but there's a way that it can feel and there's a way that it can flow. And the reality is I'd been living my life that way for a while, to the point where every decision I made was coming from what I call this intuitive place and this intuitive knowing, and I was listening to other voices. Now, are there just aspects of myself? Maybe, but it also felt quite different than the familiar voice I'd been listening to for 30 plus years, which was heavily fear-based and insecure, and that one's still there too, but it's quieter. And then I started having these more explicit experiences where it felt like these sources of information that identified themselves and had a particular voice or style of communicating, but also felt differently. I could feel the first time something I really, because some people will understand channeling as people who will allow purportedly other sources, collective sources of consciousness, entities, if you'd like to call them that, ETs, aliens, however you might refer to it, things that are not us, essentially, come through them in a way, maybe take over their body, so to speak, although that has a very almost violent connotation. It's not necessarily so aggressive. There's an agreement. It's consensual. And sort of speak, allow themselves to be a vessel, which is really the name of this podcast and pretty much everything I do, because I do see ourselves.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but is that why you named the podcast this?
Like, yeah, well, you know, I think sometimes we know things only in retrospect, right? Like right. I was just became very interested in this idea of being a vessel because I saw my understanding of trauma was like, my understanding now was like, we're all channeling, we're just channeling different things. And most of us are channeling trauma conditioned programming. That's the information, that's the fuel for the computers of our brains. A lot of us are just being channels for the trauma and thinking that's us.
Right.
And then as I started to change, I was like, oh, that's not necessarily me. And then obviously now the vessel name takes on a different meaning because but in retrospect, I can see why I was guided to this language of to be a vessel, to surrender in some way, and to see what comes through. And the first time it happened more explicitly, where I started recording myself, like I started crying because
it feels a very particular way. Like it feels very loving and powerful, like I'm being supported. And so, and that garners this trust for me, that I could trust how it felt and I could trust what was happening in my body. And I would feel so light and, you know, so that was my process of allowing that to happen. And then the reason I started telling this is because that all happened in between when I was, well, becoming more public with it happened in between me reaching out to you and us sitting down. So for you specifically, I wanted to reach out because, you know, we were scheduled for you to come on here. And I was like, Dan, I just want to let you know I stepped into this pretty out there thing that's going to be off-putting for many. And that's been part of my journey. You know, people unfollowing me, not wanting to listen to me anymore or whatever. And that's all good. That's part of my process of owning who I am and my power. And so I just wanted to, you know, respectfully give you the opportunity to not do this interview if you wanted. But the beauty of opening that door to you was, you know, you said, look, I'm totally unfazed by it. I'm actually really interested in it, which is super validating for me because it was a vulnerable time. Even though it felt aligned for me, you know, I'm still working through my own fears and doubts and perceptions and judgments and whatever. But it didn't stop there because then you mentioned that you were reading this book, and I'd mentioned the book Many Lives, Many Masters to you by Dr. Brian Weiss a while ago. And I was like, yeah, maybe he'll get around to it. But then you mentioned that. And so I'm curious how you came to this book. You'd mentioned you were reading Journey of Souls by Michael Newton, which is also a very popular spiritual book along the same line, touching on reincarnation, what happens in between lives. And I actually don't even know that much because I haven't read it. So it opened this door to, oh, wow, you were kind of or are exploring your own relationship to spirituality or your brand of it. And so I'm excited to start there and see what's been going on for you and how this book came to you and why you were guided to read it.
So to tell you the story of how I came to read this, I would have to back up a little bit. This won't surprise you, but in many ways, I would say my latest spiritual journey, not the latest one, but the one that set off everything was my recovery from back pain, because it felt like such a miracle that I was like, oh, and it wasn't just a miracle that the pain ended. It was a miracle that I found this thing that felt so me. It felt so fitting with me. And I was like, that can't be an accident. So, you know, during my back pain years, I really was basically a pretty staunch atheist. I was like, there's no way that a God exists and we can't see any of it. Why would people believe it? It felt like believing in Santa Claus to me. And I had to go through that period. And where I stand now, I don't even totally know. I know I'm not an atheist. I wouldn't even call myself agnostic because that's not giving it enough credit. But I'm just interested. You know, the flow of me has felt really good for a long time now. And I think that's what you meant by be the vessel in the first place, was that you were following your intuition. Well, I'm doing that too. And, you know, I keep feeling like, wow, things make much more sense than I ever thought. And so now fast forward, because that was a long journey. I can tell you all kinds of things about it. But I sat down to lunch with a friend of mine, a good friend of mine from high school. And she had told me about this book, Journey of Souls, like years ago, during my years of back pain. And I remember hearing her say that and thinking, whoa, that's out there. And I was just like, you heard the like backing up of a truck sound, beep, beep. I was like, I can't, you know, you're experiencing a lot of that right now, it seems like.
Yes.
Which is why I wanted to express my support for you, because I lived in a fear-based way myself. And I think people get afraid of what they don't understand or what's different. And they, you know, they're always looking out for what's wrong here. And I don't respond that way very often now. And if I do, I usually catch it and say, wait, I there's nothing bad about finding out things. There's nothing bad about being open to things. So when I sat down to lunch with my friend, as I had, you know, continued to process my own life, I said to her, you mentioned this book to me a while back. And I don't think I was ready to hear it at the time, but I really want to know more about it. Is that something you still believe? And she was like, oh yeah. And I was like, okay, well, what is it? And so she told me about this book, Journey of Souls. And it is a book by a therapist who was kind of got into past lives regressions. And he would connect to what he calls their superconscious minds. I'm sure I'm telling you things you know.
Yes, I'm familiar.
But I was not. I was like, what? You know, I knew about the conscious. I knew about the unconscious or subconscious. Mm-hmm. But the superconscious, I had no conception of. And I also had no belief in other lives. And I want to be totally upfront with you. I don't know what I believe about that yet.
Yes.
And not only that, but I'll admit, like, I'm a little guarded about the topic because I don't even know how other people will respond. But I know one thing, which is that I'm going to stay true to me, whatever that is. So I'm going to get there. But I'm in a process, and I may be behind you on that.
Not a race.
We'll see. I don't even know if behind or ahead.
Yeah,
even
it's not linear.
It's just
time
different.
Isn't linear.
It's just different. And that's one thing I appreciate about our relationship is it's so, it just flows and it's open. But in any case, I started reading the book. I mean, she told me, I read it and it just made sense. Now, the interesting thing is this guy, he interviewed and under hypnosis, he talked to all of these different people. And what really grabbed me about it is how consistent so much of it is. And I'm like, that's weird. How could there be that kind of consistency? So I just have stayed open to it. And I will say, like, it's a beautiful vision. I hope it's right. I mean, it would be amazing if it was, because it can give a sense of continuity and connectedness, and you talked about safety. I've like my feeling of safety in the world goes up when I think about it this way. So again, I don't know what I'm going to come to about it, but I've just been really interested in it, and I definitely hope that aspects of it are right. But I also kind of feel that aspects of it are right, and that's a great comfort to me. You know, I do believe whatever specific beliefs I'm going to come to, I do believe that we are all connected. I do believe that we are each on a journey that has a purpose. And I think that purpose is to develop our, I mean, he would call it souls in that context, but develop who we are, our identities beyond just like how we think about ourselves, to be as fully us as we can be. In my columns language, that's the power column. It is alignment with the self. But this is at a whole different level. This would be like alignment with the self at some kind of cosmic level or
just being open to all of what the self can mean, all of what's included. You know, I'd mentioned this before, like, speaking about parts work is very popular these days, you know, internal mm-hmm. family systems. So it's like, okay, well, what if there's just more parts than we thought? And there's a few things I'll follow up on, starting with, which is why I'm excited for you to eventually read Many Lives, Many Masters, just to give you a similar, different perspective and along the same lines and just continue to open that world for you. But what I'll say about belief is that for me personally, what has started to happen is rather than like going from, oh, I believed this in the past and now I believe this, it has almost been a recognition of the belief process itself and that the human mind is just quite limited in that like it can believe things left and right, but that doesn't mean it knows anything because the belief could change in a minute. You could think one thought for 30 years like I did, and then you could think another thought. So it has almost been a process of like surrendering my beliefs, to which I still have them, but right now, because I could tell you that I feel strongly about the material we're discussing, and I have maybe a little less resistance to it. It's the language that I use, but I'm still very open to, I'm basically just having experiences. Like when I'm in the channeled state, like I'm not necessarily believing that it's true or that the story is true. And I'm also not disbelieving it. I'm just having the experience and I feel aligned in sharing it. So this relationship to spirituality to me has, A, it's not for me, it's not about convincing anyone about it being true. It's not even really about convincing myself that it's true. It's just like, well, and it's something you alluded to earlier, which is it just started to, different things started to feel good and make sense. And I might actually call Jung coined this term, which I learned later, synchronicities, which was also popular in a book, The Celestine Prophecy. But, you know, these experiences that just seem to line up and almost take you beyond just the three-dimensional physical material world. You're like, it, I don't know, I met this person, they said this thing to me. It just felt, it felt like it was more than just my perception. And I've just had so many of those experiences, going back to exactly what you said, which is, you know, I was raised in a Jewish family, although my parents were not particularly religious. My dad was interested in Buddhist philosophy and my mom became interested in this world. So, you know, after my bar mitzvah, I was like, cool, I'm done. And there was no pushback. And I, for a little while, I was probably the most atheist I ever was when I considered myself firmly in Jewish, because I was like, how can I be Jewish if I don't believe it, or if I don't know it to be true? I don't, God, I don't know. I don't, I've been pretty unhappy my whole life. I don't really understand the language or the rituals. And then later I softened and it came back around. I was like, oh, it's my lineage. It's there's heritage there and there's culture and all that kind of stuff. So it's all good. But yeah, my journey, it just expanded to the, and it became more accepting of what is my experience? What am I being shown? And when I got sick and when I eventually came out of that, that was the greatest miracle. Speaking about any religious context, that was the greatest miracle. You know, forget what I'd read in books, like that was happening to me. So like that was going to be pretty convincing that like something, you know, because beyond the pain, underneath the pain was deep despair and depression and fear. And so I never thought that could change. I was like, yeah, this will probably be me, or this is me.
That's how I felt. Yeah.
And when it started to change, I was like, holy shit, this is not necessarily me. I'm not necessarily depressed anymore. I have different moods, but like I was changing as a person, which is one of the most astounding experiences to have as a human being, to change like how you feel about yourself, to how you show up. Like that was so miraculous to me that I just started opening me up. And I've probably always been a little inclined to these worlds because my mother was interested in it. So during my pain journey, she would just invite me to be like, you know, why don't you meet with this person? Why don't you meet me? And I had no rebuttal because I was deep in psychology. It was deep and I was still such a mess. So out of desperation, I was like, all right, whatever. And, you know, some of them were clairvoyant, some of them were intuitive, some of them were past life readers. And my body showed me the way because I could feel all my symptoms vanish sometimes. I could feel so good. And like you said, held and safe, almost like, yeah, like there's this greater womb. And like, I would just feel so good after some of these sessions, but then I would, you know, go back to grad school and like not feel that good, but be convinced that I needed to learn all this other theory and material, which I'm still grateful I did because I think it can all fold in and it makes me who I am. But it became undeniable to the point where like I feel good doing these things and talking to these kinds of people and experiencing these kinds of modalities. What lunatic would not pursue that to the nth degree and just keep pulling the thread? And that's basically what happened. And it really was my physical body and my physical health that led me down this path that I otherwise likely would not have journeyed down, because I just kept feeling better and better. And it you know, some of the consequences of that were more trust and faith in like whatever this path is. You know, I would call it a spiritual path, but I don't, that's just, they're just words. Like you said, like some people will call it souls and some people, and once you get into the world, like, you know, it's out there. So there's going to be a lot of different people using a lot of different language. I like to keep things simple. I do have, I guess, a framework is evolving for me that I speak to, but I don't hold too tightly to the language because the language is just like anything else. Language is an approximation. Like we're just, our human minds are coming up with these words to speak to these very grand experiences. But it's been working for me. And if we bring it back just to more popular Western traditions of healing, what it has elicited for me, because this is also some of what I was guided to invite you to talk about, is, you know, the trauma healing journey. Like at first, yeah, it was a lot about, you know, the stuckness and the resistance and the pain. But after I was coming out of pain, like the journey didn't end, it just changed. And I wasn't, you know, doing these really intensive individual psychotherapies. But through this exploration, I was doing more healing than I'd ever done because I was recovering some past trauma that I literally did not know about. I was feeling things so deeply in my body, which is like the goal of any therapeutic modality typically, that I'd never felt before. Some of that was with plant medicine. Some of that was with breath work. Some of that was with just honoring what was happening to me. Not even saying I believed it or didn't believe it, but just honoring publicly what was happening to me and dealing with the fallouts and the disruptions to my family relationships and all these kinds of things, which ultimately were all growth oriented because, you know, my family is growing along with me in their own way. And I was, you know, as we've often discussed, I was owning my power more and more just by being open to all of who I could be, to what the different archetypes of my life could be, which I didn't know. I never thought I was a particularly creative person. Now I write every day or I create all the time. And so regardless of like what I would even believe about those worlds, it has allowed me to access, you know, deeply human parts of myself that I just didn't necessarily believe in before. So I'm just very grateful for all that.
As you were talking, I was thinking, isn't it interesting that two psychologists could have both had the experience of thinking once we started changing, oh my God, I actually can change. I mean, I studied psychology for a long time, ostensibly believing I could change, but I don't think I really did. I mean, I thought I could change behaviorally or I could put some things in place to be different in the outside world, but I didn't expect to change inside. And then back pain and my experience with my own columns and seeing what that system did for me, it was interesting because what I started doing is looking at doubt. This will not surprise you knowing me, but I started looking at doubt and I was like, well, you know, if I doubted this and I was wrong, am I doubting other things that might be wrong? And one of the things that I called into question is, am I the way that I think I am? Am I stuck here? Which is what psychology is supposed to do, but they weren't doing it. In fact, exactly. I was often getting the message, listen, people are kind of baked by age six, and then they are who they are. And we say that all the time, you know, they are who they are. And I understand the use of that from the vantage point of let's not beat our heads against a brick wall, let's not try to get blood from a stone, all that stuff. But especially with ourselves, where we have more control over things, calling into question the idea that we're stuck being who we are, I think is a very rich and rewarding question to ask in seriousness. Because when you do, you can move past some doubt about who you are or who you can be or what you can do. And so, you know, it was really eye-opening. I was like, oh my God, my own interaction with myself and then my columns understanding and my back pain, those things together changed me much more than 20 years of therapy and grad school and growing up in the in this psychology milieu. And I was like, what do I do with that? I mean, so you know that I'm writing a book now on chronic pain in my system. And by the way, being a creator is another big change that I went through, because I am creative, but I tended to use my creativity like in conversations, making people laugh. That's where the creativity would go. Or musically, I'd sing like a cover, but I didn't believe I could create a song until maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And I gave myself the chance to do it, and I did it. And nothing's more convincing than when you actually do it. So I was like, I guess I can create a song. Then I had the question, but can I create another? Could it be better? And eventually you start to get to a belief that not only can you do it, but, and I'm sure this is very in line with what you wanted to talk to me about today, because it's just, I can feel it.
Precisely. But,
I came to feel that creation is radiating me out into the universe, and it's letting myself do that. I didn't even believe I could do that because I didn't know there was a me to radiate out. I really didn't. I felt isolated, and I felt stuck, and I felt that I was who I was. And it's not, it's hard to create out of that setup. A, you don't feel safe to do it, and B, it's not interesting. Like, what was I going to say? You know, I'll write a song about neuroticism. This would be great.
Well, and so there's a few things I want to say about what you said, but I'll start with the last part, which is I always loved the idea of creativity, and I had an obsession with music, and I still do. Although I actually don't listen as much as I used to because things have changed in the kinds of music. I used to love really depressing music, but I haven't been guided to listen. I still love those bands. I love Elliott Smith, love Radiohead, but I don't listen to them every day. Yeah. But I don't listen to them every day because of the emotion energy that comes through that. I just started to recognize, like, what am I absorbing? What different sources of information am I absorbing? And but as it relates to me, I had all these limitations, limiting beliefs, which I'm going to circle back to, the idea of belief that we've been talking about. But I had all these beliefs about myself, and my physical body was like, so I had all this trauma. So I would take guitar lessons and I would fall asleep. And I would like, I just couldn't, I would come home from school and I would fall asleep. And, you know, and I played sports, but like almost begrudgingly, I was meant to do more creative things, but I didn't know how to. I could listen to music, and then I did drugs because that opened a space in my mind and my brain that allowed me to connect. But I was always a writer, even though I had a lot of resistance to it. But like you said, when I was writing only from pain, like there was some interesting stuff. It was poetic, but after a while, and this is why I took some issue with, you know, because the mind body world really loves journaling. And I was like, well, but it depends what kind, because free writing, like when I was writing from that place of pain, I could see it was just stuckness. I would write about the most despairing things, and it would seem like, yeah, you're just getting the feelings out, but I'm just actually kind of staying in them.
You're being in the feeling while journaling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm feeling miserable, and I didn't feel a whole lot of relief. So what I noticed was, just like the voice we listen to, the voice we write with, it can be more conditioned in the sense of like, I'm not available to write from these kinds of perspectives because these kinds of perspectives are not serving me. And I'm giving myself the opportunity to see if those aren't actually me. And that comes back to the idea of belief, which is like the goals of, you know, traditional, you know, Western frames of therapy and psychology have always been great. But it was just like you said, I was never getting to the goals through the experience. And sadly, I think the truth is that like a lot of people, particularly people in the field or in training, don't. And I had a lot of peers who were like, yeah, I tried therapy and I, you know, it was good enough. And now I'm just going to do it. And I'm like, that's so It's such an odd way to enter a career life path where it's like, I don't know if it actually works for me, but I'm going to do it. And it's just like, man, we need some better tools to like, and so it wasn't until I, you know, broke some barriers and boundaries of what people would think of me and started exploring energy medicine and meeting with different kinds of people with different ways of knowing that I allowed myself to access things that everyone ultimately wants to access in therapy. It just wasn't. And it's not to say that more traditional forms of therapy were wholly unuseful. Like I had great experiences up to a point. But what I feel happens is you eventually come to the limits of the belief system of the practitioner. The practitioner cannot, we cannot guide anyone further than our own belief system is willing to go or consider. So if the belief system is like, this is a more stark example that most people don't hold anymore. I don't, well, although some do, which is like, depression is just something you manage. It's just something you manage. If that's the structure you're working within, you're never really going to invite someone to grow beyond it because that it's a box. And so, and that's a lot of medications. Look, medications can be useful in some circumstances, but they collude with that frame. Medications are not helping you break out of that frame because they're management tools. They're not really curative, although they could show you states of being that are different, but you'd have to ultimately come to the realization that you can access them on your own in order to break free of these labels and other things. So for me, it just became clear that getting free was really important. Getting free of labels, getting free of whatever I was giving my power away to, as you often talk about. And exploring these other realms, whether I was fully believing them or fully understanding how they were working, they were inviting me into something that I always wanted, which is so beautiful. And it brought me back around to like, oh, change is possible, like you said. Because I do think the truth is a lot of people who practice therapy, both the practitioners and the sufferers and the people, like, you don't really know. How could you really know change is possible unless you experience it? If you haven't experienced it, it's just going to be a belief or a trust, and that's fine. People like to say that like spirituality or spiritual principles are based in faith. Well, the other stuff is based in faith too. If you haven't experienced it, just reading a theory from Freud and it can make sense, but like if you haven't experienced change, like how far is the belief going to allow you to go? Which is why I think even though people who were trained in psychoanalysis had the same understanding of mind-body principles, because it's been talked about for a while before Sarno, but they did not have the same conviction to actually address diagnoses or to actually even believe it could happen because they hadn't experienced it in the way that more of the mind-body PPD TMS community had. So that level of conviction made all the difference. It literally allowed people to start working and with people who never thought they had a chance to heal and just experiencing these miraculous, seemingly perceivingly miraculous recovery stories, which awakens more and more of our collective consciousness to the possibility and the reality of it. And I'll say back to the creative piece, that has, I mean, that's been such a significant aspect of my own journey is like, I had a similar experience. I could write, I wrote poetry and stuff, but I was like, and I loved music, but I was like a song, I don't know it. And it, you know, I struggled a bit the times that I tried, but then just being on this journey, there were synchronicities. Like I was invited by a couple people to, like I officiated one of my friend's weddings and I did a whole thing for that. And then I gave a speech at another close friend and I ended up writing a song because I had another friend who's a musician and we just started creating together. It just happened. I was in a place where I was ready to just like start singing some of my poetry and he would create music. And it just built to like, you know, and I could feel the levels of fear and doubt, like, oh, I don't know, but let's just do it. And I wrote and performed this original song. And it was great. And I just, again, it keeps going. And like, can I do more? Can it, you know, and that feeling that I get from creating is so good and powerful. And it's the same that I get from doing any of the channeling or spirit. It just, you know, it's good for you. Like it's fuel for your soul, if we want to call it that, or fuel for your being that is not only physical, but energetic or whatever, or just non-physical in some ways, that creation is good. Creation is good for the spirit. And also challenging beliefs is good.
Yeah. I just want to add one thing in terms of my thinking. We'll see if it syncs up with you. I have a hunch it will, but you know, I think creation is incredibly good for the soul, or whatever we want to call it. You know, it's good for us. Mm-hmm. But I think in many ways it is the best thing for us, that I have never felt so aligned with me or alive as I do now while I'm creating things that come from me. And I don't mean that in an ego sense, because actually a lot of times when I write songs, one of the things that happened is I used to try to write songs by thinking of what I wanted to say and then trying to put it to music. That's not the way I write songs anymore. The way I write songs now is I start playing something musically that is just of interest to me or has a feel. And a lot of times the words start filling themselves in, and people will say, "What's this song about?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I think it's about this." But isn't it interesting that I would say of my own creation, "I think it is about this," because I know you know what I'm getting at. But the it is like I opened up a channel of communication that could allow either me to communicate with me or something to collaborate with me to create this song. I used to think about this. I'm a huge Beatles fan, and I also love Elliott Smith. I didn't know we both shared that in common. But I'm a huge Beatles fan, and especially Paul McCartney, and he would talk about things like writing Yesterday, and you know, he just woke up with that tune in his head. Like, where do these things come from? And I think increasingly I see people in the world as openly engaged in creating their world and happier for it. And other people who are just going through the world, they're not either, I don't even know what the right word is, but they're not connecting to themselves and then sharing that with the world. When I create, one of the things I love about it is it's me. You know, somebody said to me, this has been said to me multiple times, "Don't you want to hurry up and finish your book before somebody else, you know, writes something like it?" And my response was always, "Nobody can write this book. I'm the only one who can write this book. I'm not, you know, I'm in a rush to finish it because I'm ready to create it and put it out in the world and enjoy it being out there. But nobody can create what I can create. Nobody can create what you can create." And I believe that for everybody. I'm not saying that as I'm special. I believe I am special, but I think everybody is. And I look around now and I feel like so many people are not, they're not unlocked. And one of the things I love about the work I do now, which interestingly, I specifically tell people to not think of it as therapy. It is information about how people work and about the self, so that you can unlock you. That, which is, you know, I guess some therapists could say, "Well, that's supposed to be what therapy is."
Well, yeah, that's just the point, right? Is like, because I don't really call myself a therapist anymore, though I don't mind if people call me that, or clients call me that, or my mother calls me that, whatever. It's fine. I don't have. In the beginning, I was like, "No, I'm definitely not this. I'm this, like, intuitive, whatever." But then you stop fighting and just like, whatever. People can call you whatever they want. And it's also true that people could say, if I wanted to engage in like an argument or a debate around it, "Well, isn't what you're doing therapy?" Sure. Yeah. Whatever. It's just more about, can I be free of anything that feels a little bit like a limitation to me? And there are just more aligned words that I'd rather refer to myself as. So I'll do it. And like, it doesn't, yeah, it's overlapping. It's still like, if therapy is just, I refer mostly to the phrase the healing arts to being in the healing, because I like that phrase. It has the word art in it. It's expressive. It's open. It's open to various modalities. Sometimes therapy can, people like to say, what is therapy? What isn't therapy? Whatever. I like the healing arts because it's open to various ways of whatever it really is we want to do here. And that's kind of what I'm interested in.
And there's so many ways to heal, you know, and creativity is definitely one of those ways.
Yeah. And that, you know, and what I'll say about your songwriting process is if you actually read about some of, you know, some of the artists that resonated with me, which I'll also say that music and musicians is the most acceptable form of what I'm referring to as channeling for most people. Because most people, if they weren't open to any form of spirituality, but an artist says, well, this album just came through me, or this song, or Paul McCartney says, people don't question it. They're like, oh yeah, great, great. They're a really right. talented musician. But if you say it in another context, they're like, no, well, that's not possible. But in music, sure. Well, why? Why only in music, you know? But if you also, to your point about lyrics, like some of my favorite artists, like David Byrne of the Talking Heads and David Bowie would also do this, like they, and I think Kurt Cobain too, like they might just rip clippings out of a newspaper and just staple different words together, or just do different exercises to get out of their own head. And then you have these songs that are so meaningful. It's like they just got out of their own way. And they didn't feel so much pressure to have a particular meaning or understanding of the art. They just allowed it to be. And well, these words sounded good together. And then anyone else can be like, yeah, it resonated with this aspect of me. With
no, but it's true. You're interested in the process and having that process. I mean, George Harrison said that he got the title of While My Guitar Gently Weeps. He flipped open a book, and he saw Gently Weeps. That is where that comes from. And like, think about how we think about that song,
right?
And what it means. And I really do think it's a great pleasure in life to just open yourself up to process. Let's see what happens. I don't know what's coming. I don't know if I've talked with you about it, but I wrote 12 episodes of a sitcom. And while I was writing it, I was talking with somebody I was working with on it, and He was like, how are you coming up with where it goes? And I was like, I'm just kind of getting myself into a space of possibility. I don't know where it's going to go. And I'm like, what if it went there? And I'm like, yeah, that feels right. So I'm just, it is intuition. I'm feeling what is right.
100%.
And it just guides it. And I said to him at one point, I said, I need to sit down to write the next episode because I need to find out what happens next.
Yeah. And that I feel is a microcosm of what this understanding or force that is guiding my life, which is a trust that if I can allow myself to get into a particular state, that what comes through will be good. And that is forever. And it takes a lot of the pressure off of having to know everything all the time, which is something my ego really wanted to do, wanted to know everything all the time. If I was with clients, I wanted to conceptualize their whole families. And that's what was like expected of you. Like, and you were supposed to talk about them for hours at a session. Now I really don't, I love my clients, but I don't think that much about them because I trust that when I show up and I access that state of being, I will be of highest service. It doesn't have to require so much thinking. We have a little bit of this attachment to like all of this thinking effort means that like we're putting in a lot of work and we're doing a good job because I spent so much time thinking about something for hours. But like you could just show up and trust. And yeah, there are different things you can prepare for. And or you could just get into that state ahead of time and see, because the way that I quote unquote prepare for workshops or something is I will get into that state in meditation and see and just be like, all right, let's see how this is going to go or how it might go, that space of possibility. And then I'll just listen and be like, yeah, that feels good. That feels really powerful. And this is the whole area that people in the spiritual community would call manifestation, which is like you can create your life. And it doesn't have to be so pull yourself up by your bootstraps, like you're going to control everything. It's not about control, but you can get into a state to consider the possibilities of like, I'm going to spend some time, 10 minutes to like, I wonder how my life could look. And then it happens that there's a lot of research, you know, like Joe Dispenza, who is someone that you introduced me to all those years ago, where if you are getting yourself in that state and allowing a vision for your life to come forth, it does really good things. Like, because feeling good feelings does really good, like your cells like it, it's good for your brain. It can wire you to expect certain things that has an impact on how we see the world and some would say in and what we attract to us. It doesn't mean it's going to happen exactly like that, and it doesn't mean we have to set ourselves up for disappointment or to prove or disprove, but it's a great practice. If anything, you feel good more of the time because you're putting yourself in a position to feel good. And that was, speaking about miracles, realizing that I could change my state like in any way, because for most of my life, I had never really, I could only change my, and I think a lot of people still feel dependent on external things to change their state. But if you feel like you can just like tune into something inside yourself or beyond yourself that allows you to change your state, it's a really powerful recognition of like, wow, how literally how I'm seeing the world right now can change. I can open myself up to possibilities, saying things, writing a sitcom just by getting myself into a state. Like, that is so cool. That's so empowering.
Right. And these characters just, they're like friends of mine that I invented. They're my new imaginary friends. These are the imaginary friends of the 40s. I find. And, but really it's just that I love the process. And you know, you hit on something really important as far as I feel about this, which is that one of the main ways that I get there, this is a little bit tricky because it's going to sound like one thing, but I mean something else. But, and I'll explain that in a second. I don't try to control. Now, the thing that it could sound like is that I'm letting go of any wishes or anything like that, or, you know, being kind of Buddhistly detached. And that's not what it is. It's more that I am accepting what is and I'm interested in what is. So I'm not controlling. It's not so much that I've stopped controlling or I'm being super uncontrolling. It's more that I'm accepting and interested in what is. Okay. What is it? And when I'm dealing with these characters, they're alive to me. So when people say like, what are you going to have him say next? I'm like, no, it's not what I'm going to have him say next. It's what they would say next. Who are they? You know, they're real people in a way.
And what a beautiful way. What a beautiful way to create. And I've heard other really successful authors, and I feel like Stephen King says that too. Like they see it that way, at which clearly there is something there. And, you know, from my perspective, they are real because what we create is real. Just like when we create certain thoughts or beliefs, they often can become real when we create certain emotions. So they are real. And the other piece about that, about allowing yourself to get into that state is, and this is why words are tricky, right? Allow, control, like the way I would say it, or some of the spiritual people that I'm interested in, other kinds of channels actually, would say that manifestation is really about desiring, allowing to have desires and discern what you want and what you don't want without any expectations of it happening in the way that you want or happening at all, which is a very tricky line for people to dance on. But if you can get there, that's what creation can be about. You have the intention to create something, and you have some visions of like, you're just entertaining the possibilities of, oh, it'd be cool if this comes through. But then when you're in it, you're practicing like, but I'm also curious to see what'll happen. And like, so it's desire paired with surrender.
Yeah. And also I think to me, the key is just go be yourself, as cliche as that is, it's said so much. But really, I mean, your best work, whatever you do, is always going to be as you. The real question is, what is you? What's the limit of you? Is there a limit to you? You know, and I don't know. I mean, I can't remember who it was in this video. I feel like it was Bryan Cranston. He was saying that he used to go on auditions No, I don't. It might have been Michael Keaton, but I can't remember who it was. Let's assume it was one of the two or somebody else. It's one of those three. They were going on auditions and they were trying to get the job. And when they realized, no, my job isn't to get the job. That's not my job. My job is to show them my version of, if they like the version, great. If they don't, okay. The job was not to get, or the job was not to get the job. The job was to be them. And this is part of how creation happens. You know, I don't know if you like the show Ted Lasso or if you've gotten to see it, but I love Ted Lasso. And Brett Weinstein, the guy who plays Roy Kent, is one of the writers. And he submitted a video to them at one point saying, if I were to play Roy Kent, here's how I play him. And if you don't want that, just pretend this never happened. And Roy Kent is him in some way, but he's also his own entity. And what I could feel in the way he talked about it is that there was just an openness to the process. That's the fun of it. We don't know where it's going. That's the fun of it. I mean, you can maybe know where it's going generally. Like in my sitcom, I know what the overall endpoint is, which I think is good because then it's not so meandering. And I don't know if you remember the show Lost, where it was like, we were all like, oh, what's going to happen? But you could start to feel that those writers were like, what are we doing here? We're putting on a magic show. I don't know what to do here. So it's good to know where you're going, but it's also really good to enjoy the journey and know not only do I not need to know where it's going, but I can't know where it's going. And I'm excited to learn where it will go.
I do feel that inherent in the creative process is mystery, is not knowing, and being available for awe and wonder and discovery, that the process of discovery is really rewarding and shows you what you are. And some would say you are the universe. So I'm not sure if there are any limits, really, because if you peel back layers of what you think you are, eventually you come to a point where it's like, man, I'm either nothing or everything, because that's kind of the way our mind makes sense of things. And I have heard actors say that, Bryan Cranston and others, and because it can take the pressure off of like, I'm coming here to impress these people and to conform to a box that they expect, versus I'm coming here to show these people who I am and how I create and what I can do and how free I can be. And yeah, it's probably gonna work out pretty well, at least regardless of you, if you get that particular audition or not, it's going to work out well in your life because you're continuing to show up in the most free, the most powerful, the greatest surrender experiment. And in terms of what you can control or in terms of what you can practice doing, you can practice showing up as you want and surrendering to the rest and trusting that the rest will probably be good because that's a good way to contribute to that process.
Yeah, and you know, living a life, we talked about this earlier in this talk today. We talked about living a life of fear. And when you're trying to fit into a box for other people, that is fear-based. But if you're showing up and you're saying this is the box you should want, or could want, that's not fear-based. When you're connected with you and you're creating in that way, you're loving it. And
you're loving being you.
Yeah. And people want to be with that.
100%. And this hour just flew by as I assumed it would with very little script, very little. I had some idea. But, you know, then we took flight and went where we were guided to go. And I trust, because we were feeling that it will be of service. At least it was of service to us. That's kind of what's important to me. So now may be a good time to start to wrap things up as you are a busy person. But, yeah, this has been a very creative and enjoyable and expressive experience for me. And it's similar to what you say, because when I do these interviews, just as when I do, you know, and it's even more in that when I just do a solo episode, because I'll just hit record and I'll go. And I'm like, similar, like, I'm excited to see what I have to say today, like what I'm going to, I don't know what it's going to be. And to use that word, it's therapeutic. So,
sure.
Because using your voice, expressing it is good, can be. So, yeah, this has been an absolute pleasure. And I'll just leave a little room for anything else you'd like to say. We didn't touch about the book, which has been obviously such a huge creative undertaking and process for you, and which will be, well, you can speak to when that will be coming out. But yeah, anything else you'd like to add?
Moments like this are always funny because, you know me, there would be so much I could add, and I
could yeah,
easily
yeah.
do another hour of this.
Yeah.
But we will, you know, and we'll do it at a later time when the mystery will be evolving in a different way.
Absolutely.
But in terms of, you know, what I'll add, I am in the middle of creating the book, and in a even more earnest way than before, because when I embarked on the book, I kind of thought of it as, well, I'll get this done eventually and I'll give myself lots of space. And I gave myself lots and lots of space. Well, it's 12 years later. Now, there's been a lot of things that have changed, and the book has gotten better and better the longer it's taken, actually, because I've learned more and put it together more. And I would say it's much more of a creation than a book. It's in book form.
I like to call things I do art projects.
Nice. It's in the healing arts, that's for sure. But, you know, it really is true. It's in book form, but it's actually a creation. When I started it out, it was meant to be a book. Now it is coming out to be a book, in quotes, of course. But it really is a creation. It's an expression of me and my understanding of life and what I can give to other people. And it's also a way that they can get access to that very thing we're talking about, you know, where they can get in the flow with themselves. And so I'm really excited about it. It's interesting because I have not been able to write a song. I haven't even really wanted to write a song while writing this book. I haven't even really wanted to read other books while writing this book. I often don't even want to watch a show while writing this book, because this is where I am creatively. And I'm excited to finish that and then see where else I get to go. But my energy is really there. And so I just think that's part of how creativity works. When you're really in it, you're there. And so I'm very excited about it. I'm wrapping up the final edit. That should be done in late August, that edit. And I am planning to have the book out in October. So I will keep you posted. Hopefully I can come back on here and talk about creativity from that angle. Because that's a whole other ball of wax. What happens when you share it with the world?
Absolutely. And I would love to have you back on anytime, really, to discuss that stage of the journey, which will surely be different and exciting in a different way. And I'll just say that I do feel the more we can approach the things we do as projects, as creation, the more possibility, the more freedom we give ourselves for, you know, the ultimate form that things take, whether it's on the page or whatever, great, let it be in a particular form to be digested in that way. But before it gets to that place, let it be whatever it's meant to be fully, and we can step fully into that role of creator. And I agree, or at least it's been my experience too, that once you start to open that channel, you are guided to put that energy, fuel different things, different sources. I haven't been guided to do a whole lot of reading lately either, and I'm doing a lot of writing myself and just doing a lot of expression. And so, but it's ebbs and flows. But what I do realize is creative energy is something sacred and it should be protected. And so if it's not filling us up, and if something else is, we should just do that. We put the creative energy toward that and allow that to be the source and protect it if it's getting drained elsewhere, which it certainly was for me. So this has been life affirming and creatively affirming and restoring and energizing. So I'm so grateful to you, Dan, and to know you, and for our journey together and individually. And I'm excited to see where it goes.
Same here, Dan. Thank you so much for having me on and sharing generously who you are and your openness to who I am. So we'll keep it up.
We sure will.
Thanks for listening. If you like the episode, please subscribe, leave a review, or head over to my Patreon page to become a member of the Be the Vessel community with exclusive monthly benefits and to connect with me directly. You may also find me on Instagram at DrDaniel_Atkins or through my website, drdanielatkins.com, where you can also subscribe to my newsletter to stay updated on all happenings. I'd love to hear from you. Until then, may you be the light, the frequency, and the vessel for your highest vision.